I had made a decision early on in terms of my music that I would do it as an evocation. And part of that had to do with the fact that the music didn't come from my brains like my English literature or my writing did. It wasn't something that I could get a hold of and control in the same way that I could control making outlines of thoughts and putting them down on paper. It wasn't like that at all. It just came out of my spirit, and I was real clear on that, that was different. I started writing lyrics at the point where I had graduated from college with a degree in English and literature and writing as well, and decided I would be a teacher and explored that for a while, and was being a secretary registrar of a college somewhere, and I made a decision with the help of a couple of people who encouraged me that I would just take a year off and just check out music. Just see what would happen if I gave all my time over to writing. And I was scared beyond reason. I could do it all intellectually, but I didn't want to bring that to my music. I didn't want my music to have that part in it at all. And so I had been very wary about even approaching it as a full-time job or as a life's work, because I didn't want to mess it up. And at the same time, I had this nagging going on inside me all the time, and I, with the encouragement of some friends who said, what is a year? I mean, you've got a monkey on your back. What is a year of your life? Take off a year of your life, Marg, that's all. And give yourself a chance to explore music, and if at the end of that time it's just not doing what you want it to do, doesn't make you satisfied, then that's nothing compared to what it will feel like to you at age 40 or 50 to never have dealt with that and faced that muse inside yourself. So I did it. So I quit my job and I moved into the country, and I started writing lyrics immediately. All the songs I'd written up to that time had been instrumental. I did not identify when I started writing lyrics as a feminist songwriter at all. I didn't identify as a feminist when I started writing. The women's movement to me at that time was filled with a group of women who weren't strong enough to make it on their own. I had no sense of my own privilege, you know, class and race, and how all those things had everything to do with what my dad did, you know, the fact that I had been able to do the kinds of things that I've been able to do, get the education, get the music lessons, all those kinds of things. I really thought everyone should be able to do that, and if they didn't, it was just because they were lazy. And when I got in touch with how ignorant that was, it changed everything. I looked at women organizing women and women organizing with women in a totally different way. I decided to move in from the country to San Luis Obispo, where I was living outside there and moved in, and there was a consciousness-raising group that was going on there. And I had met some of the women who were in it, and they seemed like interesting people. In coming together with that consciousness-raising group, it was very interesting. There were a series of events. I was involved with those women in that group and getting in touch with my oppression as a woman. I was also making a decision that I had to take my music and do something with it. And at the same time, I went to a feminist conference in Los Angeles. Kate Millett got up on the stage and said, I'm going to have a music festival. Conferences are fine, but I think we should have a music festival, and I'm going to have one in May of this year. It's going to be at Sacramento. And so I went there. That was like maybe a month later. I went there to find a singer to sing my music. I saw performance as Janis Joplin and Judy Garland and all the women who had lost their hearts and their lives to some unhealthy entity called performance. And I didn't want to do that. I mean, I had spent quite a period of time getting myself together and centering and feeling good about myself and dealing with my ego and all those kind of things, and I didn't want to offer that up. That wasn't my trip. My trip was writing music. And I went there with the express purpose of finding someone to sing, someone who was into performance, to take my little soul pieces and carry them. And I performed my music, and everybody went, "Wow, you should sing your own music, you know? This is so great. Why look for a singer?" And I immediately went on a huge ego trip, winged out entirely, totally out of control. I was overwhelmed. I didn't know how to deal with it. And I wasn't dumb. I'd called it as it was, you know. And I decided after that I wouldn't perform. For sure I wouldn't perform. And my self said, it's not good to be controlled by anything, especially your fear. As long as you're controlled by this out-of-control ego you have here, you got to deal with it. Otherwise, it'll just come up in another way. And I thought about it a lot and made a decision that I would perform until I wasn't scared anymore. I went to a women's music festival in Champaign-Urbana, first national women's music festival, and met a whole group of women who were doing a lot of the same kinds of things I was doing. There was not a thing called women's music at that time. It was not called feminist music, per se, or woman-identified music.
What year is this?
This is 1973. I met at Champaign-Urbana at the first National Women's Music Festival, Chris Williamson, Meg Christian, Cassie Culver, Jennifer Abbott, Mary Wings and Robin Flower, I already knew Woody Simmons from Sacramento. Kay Gardner. Susan Abbott. And a whole bunch of other people. They all were there, you know. And we all looked at each other and went, oh, geez, this is so wonderful. And we were all doing real different things. Our goals at the particular time were different. But we all recognized each other and acknowledged the similarities of what we were doing. And out of that, everything else grew. I would say that Sacramento and Champaign-Urbana were the two real heavy impact situations for women's music as I know it now. It feels real important to me that women's music be defined broadly enough, especially now, so that it includes the possibility of as many women as possible. In terms of the lyric content, I think it's real clear how women's music is different. And that's, at this point in my mind, the best way to define what women's music is to say what it's not. And immediately to compare it with the music that exists on the radio today. I think that, first of all, generally, women's music is music which does not in any way denigrate women, does not present women in oppressive or one-down kinds of positions. And I think that right away, one of the things that women's music does is to define a lot more possibilities of the way that women can relate to each other. And also how a lot more possibilities of how women can relate to other people, men and women, and relate to themselves, women viewing themselves differently than the classic ways that women have been seen and have seen themselves. I was born a woman, I was born to be hurt. The idea of songs in general saying, when you're with me, I'm whole. When you're not with me, I'm only half a person. I mean, the things that I'm talking about, I see as basic tenets of feminism. I do not see feminism in opposition to humanism. I see both of those on the continuum of each other and overlapping all the time. That's my own definition. And I want to say that in terms of talking about women's music and defining out women's music, everything that I say is only my definition. I feel like the general things that it can be said, that can be said about it, are that it is talking about new and healthy relationships between men and women and women and men, basically people, and that it has to do with women relating to the world in a new way. I think that the fact is that at this point in time, there are a whole group of women who are consciously doing that. There may very well come a time where it is not necessary or even valuable to call women's music women's music. At this point in time, in my mind, the reason for defining it out as different and saying, labeling it as women's music is the fact that there is a whole group of women who are doing it, and they're doing it on purpose with a goal in mind. And we want to say that it is unique and that it exists as an entity unto itself at this time. You know, women's music to me is something that's accessible to everyone. It is possible for anyone who listens and who is sensitive to apprehend exactly what we're talking about.
And if you sandiest wall. She watches but never shares with anyone. Finding it hard to love, I feel surrounded by walls. I'm trying to grow them away, and I'm feeling so small. If I let go of my fear, the angry night will lose to dawn. And if we live each day for love, the drought inside will soon be
In my mind, the music that's on the radio now, AM music, is real political. It is suggesting to us ways that we should behave with each other. It is telling us how we should see each other. And it is reinforcing particular ways of behaving in relation to ourselves, to other people, and to the world. That, to me, is real political. The fact that so many of the singers, men and women, are saying, if you leave me, I will die. Please stay with me. I'll get down on my knees, Daddy, if you'll just stay. That's real political. So is music about how women treat each other and how women treat men, how men treat women. Under My Thumb is an incredibly political song. The exceptions to that are exceptions because they're just not enough. I think in talking about women's music and how it's different, I would not want to suggest that all of the music that I write is overtly political or even covertly political. There are some songs that I write that don't have anything to do with social change or social realities. Would You Like to Tap Dance on the Moon, for example, is just a froth tune. And it was written out of that spirit, you know, just a joyous spirit. Best Friend, on the other hand, I see as a political song in the sense that what it is talking about is a person affirming herself, you know, and now that I am grown, my best friend lives inside of me. That may be a very simple way of saying it, but my sense is real clearly that we will not make a successful revolution if the individuals who are working on it are not together. And I see a whole type of women's music being that which is transcendently feminist, transcendently humanist, transcendently political, in the sense of being all the values that have to do with being strong people and being people who are aware of the world beyond themselves. I think that even though all of us come from the traditions of Western music and the theoretical principles of Bach, Schoenberg, Stockhausen, who have defined out how music goes together, all of whom are white, middle to upper class, Northern Europeans. It makes sense that there's at least a possibility that there would be some kind of formal characteristics or theoretical principles, ways of putting sounds together, ways of organizing pitched wind that would be essentially woman-identified. I think there has to be that possibility, and I believe there is. I believe it's already in operation. I think that it's not by accident that my music, there are parts of my music, chordally, melody with chords, rhythms in relation to melody and chords, tonalities, all the kinds of things that go into making the music, not the lyrics, just the music part. It's not surprising, and it's not by accident, and it's not coincidental that my music has similarities with Laura Nyro and Joni Mitchell and Woody Simmons and Chris Williamson and Meg Christian and Cassie Culver and Kay Gardner and Sally Avedikian. And it doesn't have to do with the fact that we've heard each other. Because when I was writing my music, I hadn't heard Laura Nyro yet. I hadn't heard Joni Mitchell. I hadn't heard Chris Williamson. And none of them had heard me. And I think that realizing that there's a possibility that there is a woman's aesthetic, that there is woman's music that comes from some kind of collective woman's musical unconscious, realizing that there's that possibility makes me want to push myself to get there. It's harder to push the form. Just because, not only because of my limitations as a listener of music and what I have heard, but also because of the audience. We all always have to keep in mind that form must maintain some kind of accessibility or we're going to lose the audience. And I want to build our audience. I want to take the words and the performance of the words and the music to as many people as I possibly can. And part of what that means is that I must maintain accessibility as a writer and as a performer. What usually happens in writing a song is that I start out with a rhythm. This isn't always so. I could take you through kind of how the song happened. Lost in Inner Space would be a good one. I had a rhythm which occurs in the middle of the song, which is the fast cluster chords, jazzy, syncopated rhythm. I had been playing that rhythm, those chord changes in that rhythm for about 6 months. Didn't have a melody, didn't have any words, didn't know what I was going to say at all. Just playing it because I liked how it sounded. It seemed real hot when I played it. I loved it because it was hot. And didn't have any idea where I would go, and I reached the point where in my life I was feeling like I just couldn't take the pressure of performing and trying to write and trying to be a good person, trying to be clear about what I was doing with my music and what I was doing as a woman, as a public person who was being given power, all those kinds of things. And I overloaded with all the pressure and all the focus on me, and I took off some time, and right at the point of where I took off the time, I was feeling real crazy, and I started out at the piano, as I was doing a lot then, just sitting at the piano playing chords, just looking, searching around on the piano, and singing out words, which is a lot of times how I write, just singing out words, what is it, what are you feeling? And I got in touch with this feeling of, I just want to hand it over, I want to abdicate responsibility and hand it over. And I started singing, everything's done for you here, everything's run for you here. Isn't it easier, you know? Why not decide to stay lost in inner space, you know? I was writing, you know, there, it's so silent here. Just like, you know, get the straitjacket and carry me off, man. I'm checking out. I am checking out. And I wrote, and it was going along, and I had two verses of the song, and came to the, what's called the bridge, or the internal part of the song where you usually change into a different something, and I, for some reason, I put that piece in, that fast syncopated piece, and what came out was the conflict. You know, is it better to just center yourself and just stay inside yourself, or is it better to go out there and try to make some social change, try to change stuff out there, try to impact and interface with the world, you know, and try to do the work out there, or do you just retire, isolate yourself, and write the music and send it out, you know? That's what all that inner part of that song is about, and there's a tremendous churning and going around in the song. That song starts out with a slow, almost dirge-like quality, and then gets into this real tense, fast, conflicted kind of chords, rubbing chords, and then goes back out. I had resolved what was happening in my mind when I started writing the song, which meant that I went back to the beginning of the song and took out everything's done for you here and changed it to everything's done by you here. And that, and everything's run by you rather than everything's run for you, which shifted the whole emphasis of the song around to saying you must take time for yourself to go inside and get yourself centered so that you can continue to do your work.
Thank you.
my sense of what a good song is a song which is inevitable, where everything has to go where it goes. Best Friend is a beautiful example of that in my mind, because by the time it gets to the chorus, the chord changes, the melodic progressions, the rhythm, everything about it brings the song and the audience to the point where the only thing that can happen is the chorus, and the most appropriate response is to sing. I didn't plan that. I consider that a brilliant song, but I did not plan it. It happened that way, and I am humbled by the fact that it came out of me. You know, I am amazed. I think that the song is constructed in a stunning way. It, how the muse, you know, suggested. They're, good songs are not arbitrary. They're on purpose, and the pieces that come together on purpose. If I were to diagram out that song, it would make absolute sense why the progression of events, musical events and song, are such that the chorus happens the way it happens, and that's why the audience sings. It's not just because the lyrics are real neat. It has to do with what happens to the audience viscerally in the progress of the song up to that point. One of the things that's real beautiful about the music that I am writing, to me, is that it is being made clear that it's accessible to people. And one of the ways that it's being made clear is the fact that people feel free to involve themselves in the song while the song's going on. And the first time that that happened to me, I'd only performed Best Friend two or three times, and no one had ever sung along with me. No one had ever shared one of my songs with me. And it just wasted me, just made me cry. It was so beautiful. I now feel like I've gone one step beyond that even with myself, and that is to feel safe enough and to feel at one enough with audiences so that I can stop singing entirely in that song. And I think that's part of what I'm trying to do, is to open up the music, open up my music and share it, open up myself on stage and share myself, open up the experience of being a strong woman and sharing that with all people. I see that as the thrust of what I'm doing, defining out my ideas of what would be a good way to live, how I am trying to live, which is very personal. It also has real political consequences, because I think that there are a lot of people who are trying to do the same thing I am. I don't think I'm an isolated case. And the reason that I identify that way is because I made a decision that that's part of my work, not only to write the songs, but also to present them and to say what it is and to be the way I am and to be as clear as I possibly can. I am performing on purpose. I'm very conscious about what I'm doing. I'm not up there to do the la-las. I am not up there to be a star. That's not ever why I wanted to be a performer. I am doing work that I see as part of trying to affect social change, trying to present beautiful music, my music, in the best way I know how. I know I'm real good. I know that I'm willing to change and grow. And I want to model that and say to all the people who see me, I am not a finished product, for sure. I think it's important for performers, and I see women in women's music. It's another thing that makes us different. I see the women that I work with and the women I see identifying themselves as being involved in women's music, being willing to risk that kind of vulnerability, not out of weakness, but out of strength, out of saying, I will show you me as much as I know, as much as I can, as much as I am right now, tonight. And I mean, for sure, none of us are the end product, none of us. But I think that we're all aiming for it. My responsibility is, as a woman who has identified herself as being a feminist, a woman who is committed to women's culture. Those two things mean a whole bunch of stuff right away. That means that my priority as a musician is working and supporting other musicians that are women. It means that I want to encourage and do everything I can to support women on all levels of women's music. I mean, specifically because that's my area. That doesn't mean that I don't support women's culture in general. I see myself as a cultural worker. I think it's real important to support women in terms of who I have on stage with me, who works with me, who defines out what my music will sound like once it goes beyond the piano and my voice. The record that I'm going to be doing will be produced and engineered and put together entirely by women. And the reason for that in my mind is that I want to support women on all levels of production. I want to be a part of helping women who have never had a chance to get the skills, to get them, to offer them experience in the studio. I am not willing to offer up the quality of my music ever, for a what appears to be a political goal. I think that we do ourselves a disservice every time we say, I will offer up the quality of this piece of work to make this political point, because part of the political point is the quality. No one is surprised when the work women do is second rate. No one is surprised. In fact, they expect it. And part of the focus of my work, and especially in this project, because that's what I'm doing right now, is to make the statement that I can put together, and that women can put together, projects, and in my case, put together an album of high quality, beautiful, tenderly cared for music, working entirely with women. There are a lot of other women that have done that too. I feel like at this point in time, it's real important for there to be independent record companies. It's real important that Olivia Records exists as a national women's record company that will record women who don't have the resources to record themselves. I am fortunate enough to have the resources to record myself, which allows and frees up Olivia Records to record a group that doesn't have the resources themselves. I feel like part of the reason that I've been able to start Pleiades Records is because I have been a part of Olivia Records. I've watched Holly and Redwood Records. I've watched Kay Gardner form Urana Records in New York. I expect that once the album is out, I will take a period of time to write before I go on the road to promote the album. It's real important to me that I continue to be identified as a songwriter as well as a performer. I'm always trying to be careful that I don't lose that in the rest of the stuff that I'm doing, whether it be organizing or performing, because that's why I'm doing everything else, you know, is because of the songs that I write. Yeah, I will do a national tour probably in January, set it up, start on the West Coast, and one of the beautiful things that's happened in women's music in the past 3 years is that we have been able to set up production companies so that when I go to Cleveland, I call up Oven Productions, you know. I don't call them up when I get to Cleveland. I call them up a couple of months in advance. Yeah, right, so do me. No. There are a whole bunch of production companies that are run by women for women's music and women's culture specifically that I will work with. I think part of it is setting up a network so that there will be enough possibility of making money so that more than just a few people can go out and make their living doing it. It has not escaped any of our attentions that, by and large, the people who do women's music are soloists, white, middle class. And that's real limited, that's all. I think that among the women that I know, there is a real high consciousness about that fact and a real willingness to look beyond our own lives in terms of the things that we write about. And that's something that we have to sit with and learn about. You can't expect a working class woman or a lower class woman to quit her job and walk into something that can't pay her rent. And so, like, we have to think real seriously about ticket prices and talking about, we want to keep the price low enough so that everybody will be able to go to see it. We also need to keep the prices high enough so that women beyond the privileged few can make it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're in a circular thing where very few types of women are going to be able to afford to do it. And I think that if we're going to really talk about building a viable economic alternative in women's culture and specifically in women's music, the responsibility has to be looked at real carefully in terms of priorities of where the audience spends its money. Part of what has to happen is that we have to talk to each other and educate each other enough so that it's understood it is going to cost. It is dear. The price will be dear. The price is dear for all of us right now. To build a culture is a real dear thing, I mean, in terms of being costly, psychically. On all the levels, you know, because we're fighting something that already exists that doesn't want to move over. But it's a question in my mind of priorities. Do you believe in it? And if you believe in it, and if you see it as something that we can win, you know, the struggle, then you put your money where the movement is. Otherwise, the only people who will be able to afford the whole thing are very privileged few. And it's like, it's just education. It's just that we have to ask the questions we want answers to. To break it down is like something that we have to do together. I have to be accessible. I have to be places. I have to not surround myself by people so that other people can't get to me, don't want to speak to me. We have to learn. I think we're afraid. I'm afraid. I get afraid that I'm not going to be seen as me. I don't want to be whatever the fantasy of the star is. I don't want that. That's the sick part that made me not want to ever do it in the first place. I never wanted to be a self-fulfilling prophecy of doom. You know, I didn't want to slaughter myself. And that's why I didn't want to perform. And I think that what I've learned is that there's at least a possibility, with the support of women, of doing it differently. Of seeing each other as equals and far out. You do music, I do photography. Or I do children. Or I do teaching. Or I do whatever. How to communicate to audiences that the fact that I'm up on stage means I'm doing my work. And if you're doing whatever you're doing, then you're doing your work too. My work's not better than yours. You know, hopefully, I mean, especially in terms of women who are conscious and focusing in on working for social change from a feminist aspect or standpoint, that that's all equal and all necessary. You know, we got to do it together. That's the message of the whole thing. We got to do it together. I mean, I hope to God women's music grows and grows and grows and more women come and be a part of it, because there need to be more. They need to be supported. The press needs to cover them. The woman's press needs to be out there doing reviews of people who aren't, you know, the four of us or the ten of us. There are lots more women, and they need the support. I mean, people say that, asking all the time, gee, it's only, you know, a few women who ever get reviewed, and what about the other ones? So I ask the same question, what about the other ones? And where is the press? And why aren't they there? I mean, I was so lucky because I started out when the audience was growing. And I was growing, and now the audience is there. Play marbles on a black ball.
just